Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
So the judge has reserved the ruling for Tuesday at 9 next week. And we'll be ready for it. Of course, that extends the jail time of our client by so many days. It's not the result we had hoped for, but it is what we are living with for the moment.
A Ugandan court plans to rule on the bail petition of a government critic on Tuesday.
There had to be opportunity to go to school. There had to be adequate treatment for them if they are sick. Third of all, you have to feed them with healthy 3 square meals a day. These are part of the reform, because when you don't treat them well, instead of reforming them, then you have trained another monster. And then the society is going to embrace them again. And it's going to be a chaos for us who are paying the taxes.
A Nigerian human rights group calls for prison reforms.
Regardless of how they have learned to do that, we think that the president should take decisive action in order to show and to send the strong message that he will not tolerate corruption in any way, shape, or form.
And Transparency International calls on Zambian President Hakainde Hichilema to take immediate and decisive action against any of his appointees who engage in graft. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. News wires report gunfire at several military installations in Burkina Faso's capital Ouagadougou this morning. Bloomberg News says shots were heard at a military airport as well as Sangoule Lamizani base, a military prison. Gunfire was also heard at a regiment in the city of Kaya. Reuters says the government has confirmed the shot but denies reports on social media that the military is taking over. The Defense Minister General Barthélemy Simpori denies rumors that President Roch Marc Kabore has been detained or that the government is threatened. Reuters says Simpori added that the motives behind the soldiers is not known, but that defense officials are trying to reach them. He says the situation is now calm. A Ugandan court plans to rule on a bail application request for detained author and government critic Kakwenza Rukirabashaija on Tuesday. Defense attorney Aaron Kiza petitioned the court contending that it is his client's constitutional right to seek bail. He added that he has credible information that shows Ms. Rukirabashaija has been tortured. However, the state prosecutor argued that the court should not approve the bail, saying that his release from jail will undermine an ongoing investigation. Rukirabashaija, who was arrested on December 28, is charged with offensive communication under the Computer Misuse Act. This for using offensive language to criticize President Yoweri Museveni and his son, Lieutenant General Muhoozi Kainerugaba, a commander of land forces. Defense attorney Aaron Kiza tells me that a report by the prison authorities show that his client has scars from the torture he says was carried out by state security operatives.
We applied for bail, which the state opposed on the ground that the investigations are ongoing. We replied that it was an electronic offense and there is no way our client would interfere with the investigations, which they said he could. The judge has not ruled on the application, during which we presented the 4 competent sureties, including lawyers, advocates of the High Court, and comrades in civil society, and members of, and a member of his family. So the judge has reserved the ruling for Tuesday at 9 next week, and we'll be ready for it. Of course, that extends the jail time of our client by so many days, and it's not the result we had hoped for, but it is what we are living with for the moment.
There were suggestions in court that perhaps your client might have been tortured. What is the situation? Because the state attorney is arguing that the report is inconclusive of how your client got those scars. basically.
That at best is propaganda. Our client was arrested violently. The torture was done by government functionaries, specifically the military, SFC Special Forces Command, who were detaining him in Entebbe. They did that before they took him for the house search in his country home, Iganga, and they tortured him all the more after the house search on Monday, 3rd January, because he exposed the torture. So they tortured him, and he talked about the torture, and they tortured him as a punishment for talking about the torture. He told me that twice when I went to visit him on remand in Stadia government prison. The government medical report, and the government medical report is not done by an independent doctor, or independent doctors haven't accessed him, still confirms that he is healing from scars. Now, those scars are of wounds and injuries that he sustained in the military custody before he was brought to court and remanded to come to civil prison.
But the state is arguing that the court should not grant him bail because it might interfere in their ongoing investigation. However, I understand the Human Rights Commission officials also witnessed what they described as obvious marks of torture by security personnel. Do you share their assessment?
Their assessment is mild. I described the first time I went to see him how he was tortured in clear details. They picked muscles off his thighs with pliers. The whole back has wounds. They are healing. The hands were beaten for the simple reason that the guys, people of the opposite sex, like his hands, so they decided to beat them. The reason he was beaten was chiefly because of the putting on Amazon his book, The Banana Republic, where writing with the prisoners, that is a memoir of the torture he underwent for writing The Great Barbarian. He's pitiable.
When will independent medical team of medical doctors assess him about the...
We have been trying to get independent doctors and to access him in vain so far, but we hope that he gets bail on Tuesday and they will accept him. If we do not grant bail on Tuesday, then we request order the prison authorities to open their doors to independent medics.
Aaron Kiza is the defense attorney for Kakwenza Rukirabashaija, an author and government critic. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. In Uganda, schools are struggling to attract the number of students they had before COVID-19 forced them to close. A low turnout of between 50 and 60% has been reported, especially in rural areas. This is mainly attributed to poverty and a loss of interest among learners who have stayed away in lockdown and prefer money-making ventures to education. For VOA, Catherine Nambi reports from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
18-year-old Francis Tumwijuche is one of many students who have not returned to school despite their reopening by government. Tumwijuche was recently loading sugarcane trucks at the border between Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo. He explained his goals to VOA.
I'm just working. I'm looking for money to buy some books. If I get school fees, I can go.
It's been 2 weeks since Uganda's schools were reopened after being shut for nearly 2 years to help control the spread of COVID-19. However, only a small number of students have resumed their education. In some schools, not even half of the learners they had before closure have come back. Cesar Akena is a district education officer in Gulu district in northern Uganda. He says the turnout in most schools is worrying.
Only 15% of learners in most of our schools get reported.
Because when we were closing in March 2020, we had 29,000 learners.
So if we compute the 15%, this is roughly only 3,500 learners. This is very unfortunate.
Parents and caretakers say they have lost jobs and sources of income during the COVID lockdowns and are not able to afford school dues and provide scholastic materials to their children. In some schools, teachers are finding it challenging to ensure regular attendance, even by the few learners who have returned. Matthew Baita heads a school in Masaka District in central Uganda.
The learners, the first place, it has been a tug of war to make them stay in class. Those few who have turned up, because they have been used to another environment, but we are trying our level best to counsel them so that they cope up with the new environment, which they have not been used to.
The Ugandan government, together with partners, has now embarked on a campaign to ensure all children return to school. Dr. Joyce Moriko Kaduchu is Uganda's State Minister for Primary Education. She says the efforts target parents who are still hesitant to return their children to schools and learners who deliberately do not want to go back.
In particular, this is going to be a one-month campaign, and it will target the return to school for the most vulnerable children, like the children with disability and those that have begun work during this COVID pandemic period when schools were closed. There will be messages on selected television and radio stations. We're going to have posters, online channels like community radios, and other means of communication to impress the importance to caregivers of sending the children back to school.
A number of schools have remained closed due to the failure to attract the required number of learners. Before school closures, Uganda had about 15 million students in learning institutions across the country. However, statistics from Uganda's National Planning Authority indicate that 30% of learners are projected to stay away forever due to teenage pregnancies, early marriages, and child labor. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
In Nigeria, the NGO charity and human rights group called the One Love Foundation is calling for immediate prison reform. This after it petitioned authorities saying the country's treatment of inmates is disappointing and regrettable. Chief Patrick Eholo, founder and president of the foundation, says his organization has launched a project called Second Chance. It provides prisoners with several services, including free legal representation, medical care, and funds to feed them. Chief Eholo says the government needs to do more to reform prisons, adding that prevailing conditions in them are poor. For more about the One Love Foundation's crusade for much-needed changes, I reach Chief Patrick Eholo.
Truth to be told, if you know our prison system here, it's only the poor people who stole Maggie, which of course I don't encourage, that has been incarcerated. There are a lot of politicians who stole our common patrimony that's still being escorted by Navy, soldiers, and police. So it would be absurd to see that we abandon those who are in prison. So I'm doing something different this year, you know, by going out to the prisons. I've written to the Minister of Interior so that they can look at the prison system very well to ask questions about how much is being budgeted into the prisons. Because from my funding, the prisoners doesn't get 3 square meals. They don't get medical attention. And so many things is wrong with our prisons. And even the warders there are as bad as the inmates, because they stole anything you propose for the inmates. So we must try and reform the prison and make sure that we give them a second chance.
Now, Chief, specifically, what do you want to see reformed?
Well, you know, it's a lot. You see, when people are arrested, prosecuted, sentenced, when they are serving their sentence, even with the Geneva Convention, prisoners have to be treated very well because we are reforming them. First of all, there had to be opportunity to go to school. Second of all, there had to be adequate treatment for them if they are sick. Third of all, you have to feed them with healthy 3 square meals a day. So you ask me, what kind of reform do I want? These are part of the reform. Because when you don't treat them well, instead of reforming them,
then you have trained another monster. And then the society is going to embrace them again. And it's going to be a chaos for us who are paying the taxes.
Some Nigerians I have spoken with said this reforms that you seek might not happen today or tomorrow, because if the federal government does not necessarily have money for security agencies, including the police, to reform the police, pay them well to be effective, what about the prisoners who have committed crimes and that they know that committing a crime, it's dangerous because there's no money for real reforms in the prison, so do not commit the crime. How do you respond to such people?
Your questions are very vital. Let me tell you that 70% of those who are there are not criminals because they did not give the rights for them clearly to understand that they have a right to remain silent without contacting their relatives. That's number one. They also have a right to remain silent because whatever they say can be used against them in a competent court of law. That's number two. Thirdly, you know our police system the way it works. They take statements from you under duress. And thirdly, you also witnessed what happened to me that went viral when I went to support the NSAS so that it can be a monument for those people that were massacred, that were killed in Lucky Toge. I was arrested, and the DPO said, arrest the idiots, and they shoved me into a black barrier. If it was not the camera that doesn't lie, I would also be a criminal. I would also be in there. And those people would also have the perception that everybody in jail are criminal. Was that a criminal speaking for the voiceless and for the less privileged? No, I wasn't a criminal.
How will your foundation support this prison reforms that you seek?
Well, if you have the will, you have the way. I've been doing this for over 25 years. I'm not asking anybody for any money. I've never asked for any money. I've been using my own, you know, my own money to pursue anything that I believe in, anything that I feel that will impact the humanity. So I've been doing it. I've been giving scholarships to prisoners while they're in prison. I've been going there to have a pro bono lawyer to look at cases that were, I felt in my heart, that justice were not done. I've been going there, you know, to give them sewing machines and give them a trade work on my own. And this can be investigated and can be verified. So I've been doing it. But if I continue to do what is right, I'm sure that there are good Nigerians like you who will also want to come on board to support it morally or otherwise. Not financially now, but before the government will know their responsibility. Because if we start screaming and telling the government that they must reform the prison system, we're not asking you to train and breed more criminals for us. We are saying that for those who are rightly or wrongly convicted should be entitled to whatever the Geneva Convention said is their entitlement. So it's very clear. In this country, we have men who are institutions. We don't have institutions in Nigeria. We don't have systems in Nigeria. That is why we're having problems that we're having today. How do you expect somebody who went to jail, instead of you reforming it, then you train him and bring him to become a hardened criminal? And that's why when they are outside, they want to go back.
Chief Patrick Eholo is the founder and president of the One Love Foundation. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. In Zambia, Transparency International is calling on President Hakainde Hichilema to take immediate and decisive action against any of his appointees who engage in financial mismanagement. Such a move, the anti-graft organization says, will bolster the president's commitment to root out corruption across all public institutions in the Southern African country. The call comes after the president lamented that former administration officials who are being investigated for corruption are teaching his appointees how to siphon public funds meant for the poor. But leading members of the former ruling party sharply deny his allegations. They say it appears the president is setting the stage to arrest top former government officials on trumped-up charges. Maurice Nyambi is the executive director for Transparency International Zambia. He tells me that President Hichilema and his ministers must take steps to weed out corruption.
Basically, what gave rise to this call was President Hichilema's statement where he was lamenting and complaining that there is a clique of former ministers and other officials from the previous Patriotic Front regime who are actually teaching his ministers to be stealing public funds or to be stealing public resources. So on the basis of that statement, which we really found that to be quite concerning, we did issue a call to President Hichilema that if indeed he discovers that there are any of his ministers that are involved in corruption of any sort, regardless of how they have learned to do that, we think that the president should take decisive action in order to show and to send the strong message that he will not tolerate corruption in any way, shape, or form.
The former ruling party, the Patriotic Front officials, have denied any involvement of their officials teaching anybody to be corrupt. But why do you think it's worrying to hear the president making such a statement? Some people are suggesting that that perhaps could be a caution to the ministers to desist from being lured into siphoning public funds.
Well, the truth is that we do not really know what led the president to say that, or you know what his motive was for doing it. So all we can do at this point really is to speculate. But I think there are a number of things that we can already raise, even just based on what the president said. The first is that it is a concern when, you consider the fact that these ministers, that they can be so susceptible to actually allow themselves to be taught how to steal public funds or how to steal public resources. Now, these are ministers that, whilst they were in opposition, when the UPND was in opposition, they really took a very strong stance against corruption and against misuse of public funds. So our expectation would have been that when they now get into power, there will be a model for how public officials or public servants should actually serve in those positions of authority with which they have been entrusted.
So where do you stand on how the government is embarking on this anti-corruption drive to weed out corruption in Zambia's public institutions?
So there are a lot of expectations, even from members of the public, in terms of what the UPND is going to do to fight corruption. My personal take, and the point of view of CIZ, is that what the UPND administration needs to come up with is a comprehensive country strategy that is going to provide clear direction to the fight against corruption. Because at the moment, it seems that it kind of seems ad hoc and very haphazard in a sense. Because you have an arrest here by the Anti-Corruption Commission, then tomorrow you have them again doing something else. So it's not very coordinated and not very well harnessed at the moment. And so our belief is that we need the UPND administration to come up with a comprehensive strategy, a comprehensive and integrated country strategy that is going to bring all the different stakeholders and bring the strength and abilities of the different stakeholders into tackling this fight. I am aware, Peter, that the United States government just about a month ago, I think it was when President Biden was hosting the summit on democracy, in the build-up to that, they did actually release a comprehensive strategy for the country in terms of leading the fight against corruption. And whilst, of course, you cannot compare Zambia and the United States, I think that the principle that, you need some form of framework, some form of direction that is going to guide the fight against corruption is one that we can certainly learn from. And we have challenged the UPND government to leave this as their legacy.
Maurice Nyambi is the Executive Director for Transparency International Zambia. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. Meanwhile, a leading Zambian opposition figure says charges against him are politically motivated. Raphael Nakachinda from the main opposition Patriotic Front, or PF, was recently released after police arrested and charged him with offenses, including instigating violence and defaming President Hakainde Hichilema. Nakachinda is alleged to have called for violence and insulted the head of state while campaigning for the PF's candidate for the Kabwata constituency by election in the capital, Lusaka. The police say Nakachinda accused Hichilema and his foreign friends of planning to evict some residents in the constituency to build a shopping mall. He's also accused of using abusive language against the president, which the police say is illegal under the constitution. But Raphael Nakachinda tells me that the police are undermining his fundamental right to free speech, which he says is protected by the constitution.
It's really very sad that a government and a president that was campaigning and promising the Zambian people that he was going to guarantee the rule of law, freedoms and rights of citizens, among them obviously the freedom of expression, and within a short period of them being in government, I have been a victim of arrest after arrest in the name of the defamation law against the president. We are campaigning in a by-election in Kawata constituency in Lusaka province, and in the campaign trail, I happened to review the fact that this government is planning to demolish one of the residential areas in that constituency with a view of building a mall.
But let me ask you this, Nakachinda. Do you have proof, the information you were giving the people of Zambia, particularly in the Kabwata province in Lusaka, is true?
Well, I received that information from very credible sources, and our responsibility is to speak on behalf of the Zambian people. And in a democracy, when there is an issue that arises, that's why the president has a spokesperson in his office. He also has a government spokesperson in the Minister of Information. And to that effect, if at all the information that we have received as opposition is not accurate, they have a responsibility to the Zambian people to straight the record, to set the record straight. In this case, we are very sure that the credible source of our information would not mislead us. And we're placing a challenge on the government and also warning the people who are the voters in Kawata constituency that if they proceed to vote for the UPND candidate, he will be a conduit to implement that program, which will be detrimental to the welfare of the ordinary people in Kabata constituency. And how does that then turn into a criminal offense that I had to be arrested, detained, and of course, in trying to fish what they would charge me with, they say I was proposing violence.
Are you saying that you never proposed violence?
No. I was actually proposing for the people of Kawata to vote for our candidate, who we believe is the best candidate. And it has been proven so in the sense that the UPND government has instigated a cancellation of that election, fearing that they're going to lose, by bribing one of the candidates to withdraw so that then we can have a fresh nomination. And clearly they are intending to change their candidate because they were very sure that they're going to lose.
Isn't this just mere politics? But when you talked about bribery without proof, then it borders on defamation. Don't you think so?
Look, if a candidate, there are people who, for example, he stood on a political party that sponsored him, and the political party say itself cries foul and says that there is interference with our candidate by the ruling party, and it looks like they want to, induce him with either money or anything for him to withdraw. How would we then interpret in a competition? And what was feared then happened, and then the reasons for which the person was being coerced or bribed to withdraw clearly is about to be, implemented, and that is for the UPND to change their candidate. What would we conclude would have been the reason for which this gentleman was withdrew from the campaign?
Now that you have been charged, what's next for you?
First of all, we are going to continue to advocate that this archaic law, which is basically a colonial the piece of legislation that was meant to protect the Queen of England at the time, should not, in a democratic society like ours, as Zambia, be in the books of our statutes. It needs to be repealed. But beyond that, Ms. Aka Ndeichirema has been feeding the international community, feeding the Zambian people with rhetoric, where he is saying he wants to make sure that he restores the rule of law and guarantee freedom of expression, when in fact, behind the scenes, is giving instructions to law enforcing agencies to target political opponents to intimidate them through arrests on bogus and all these trumped up charges that is they are charging us with.
Rafael Nakachinda is a leading member of the Zambian main opposition party, Patriotic Front, or PF. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Mpuga and music from our African collection. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Mpuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. The FIFA World Cup Qatar 2022 Africa draw is out. West Africa rivals Nigeria and Ghana will face each other in the playoff. The two were paired up on the day Ghana's coach, Milovan Rajevac, was dismissed following the Black Stars' poor performance at the Africa Cup of Nations 2021, where they finished bottom of their group after suffering a 3-2 defeat to first-time qualifiers Comoros. The full draw for the final stage of Africa World Cup qualifying is as follows. Egypt take on Senegal, Cameroon play Algeria, Ghana play Nigeria, DR Congo will meet Morocco, and Mali faces Tunisia. Meanwhile, the Africa Cup of Nations in Cameroon enters the knockout stage this week. 16 of the original 24 teams remain, with 8 teams knocked out. Shockingly, African giants Ghana and Algeria were both eliminated in the group stage. Algeria were the defending champions, while Ghana failed to reach the knockout round for the first time since 2002. Ivory Coast will play England in a friendly at Wembley on March 29th. Ivory Coast are ranked 56th in the world and are through to the last 16 of the Africa Cup of Nations, having knocked out holders Algeria on Thursday. This will be the first time England have played Ivory Coast at a senior level and the first time England have faced non-European opposition since November 2018. In athletics, Kenya's world champion Hellen Obiri is among the entries in Saturday's Northern Ireland International Cross Country event in Dundonald. The 32-year-old's entry is seen as a big boost for the event. Obiri won the World Cross Country title when that event was last held in 2019. She also won 5,000 meters gold at the past two World Championships and took silver over the distance at the Tokyo Olympics behind Dutch star Sifan Hassan. Obiri's performance in Tokyo matched her silver medal at the Rio Games in 2016, and her last run in UK saw her winning the Great North Run in September. This Saturday's event is part of World Athletics Cross-Country Tour. And in Kenya, on Saturday, Joyce Chepkomoi and Samuel Cheboloi both became the national champions, racing on one of the toughest and most exciting courses ever designed for a cross-country. Chepkomoi claimed the title in 34 minutes ahead of Margaret Chelimo, who clocked 34.01.8. In the senior men's 10-kilometer race, Cheboloi, the younger brother of world 1500-meters finalist Ronald Kwemoi, won in 29.28.9, finishing ahead of Kennedy Kiprop, who clocked 29.35.2, and Vincent Kiprotich, who made it in 30.02.6. And that's about it for this edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
Bali wa Baliwa, baliwa. Savarin de futembea, usiwe pala tembea. Bakusazo kulete, bakusazo terete, bakusazo nyirite, ali wange tulite. Bakusazo kulete, bakusazo terete, bakusazo nyirite. Savari de Fontembea, usiwe pala tembea. Savari de Fontembea, usiwe pala tembea. Bakusazo kulete, bakusazo terete, bakusazo nyirite, ali wange tulite. Bakusazo kulete, bakusazo terete, bakusazo nyirite. Bakusazo kulete, bakusazo terete, bakusazo nyirite, ali wange tubite. Bakusazo kulete, bakusazo terete, bakusazo nyirite. No, no.
Jean-Jacques.
Sunday Music Spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, Managing Editor William Eagle and reporter and producer Douglas Mpuga, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, the crocodile does not die under the water, so that we can call the monkey to celebrate its funeral. I'm your host, Peter Clotte in Washington. Good evening, Africa.